The Katra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Katra AI. Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we are taking a look, a really deep look, actually, into something we use every single second, but rarely think about.
We're talking about time itself, that whole system, seconds, minutes, the 24-hour day, the 7-day week.
Exactly. We treat it like it's just there, like gravity, a fundamental law of how the universe works.
But that's where it gets interesting. Our mission today, drawing on the work of classical scholar Leo Frank Holford Stravins, is to show you that assumption. It's basically wrong.
Yeah, we're really challenging that core idea that time is objective. We want to uncover this surprising truth that our very precise, very linear system of time, it's actually a complex, messy, and fascinating cultural and technological construct.
And that's the really significant part, isn't it? Because this deep dive reveals that the history of keeping time is, in many ways, the history of human civilization itself.
It shows how we organize everything, knowledge, power, even what things mean.
Mm-hmm. You start messing with the clock or the calendar, and you quickly find you're actually managing society.
Okay, so before we get into the nitty-gritty, the calendar chaos, let's talk about the person guiding us. Who is Leo Frank Holford Stravins? Why is his perspective so unique here?
Right. Holford Stravins is, well, he's a really distinguished classical scholar, a linguist, a historian. His specialty is ancient languages and, crucially for us, chronological systems.
And his background is key because he doesn't come at this like a physicist thinking about space-time, does he?
No, not at all.
Yeah.
He approaches time as a social thing, a cultural phenomenon, almost like an anthropologist would.
It's not about relativity or, you know, the fabric of the cosmos. It's about us, humans, trying to impose some kind of order on things.
Precisely. And his deep knowledge of Latin, Greek, medieval texts, it gives him this direct window into the actual struggles, the debates, the politics behind making the first calendars.
So he sees timekeeping less as a scientific quest for the ultimate truth and more as, well, a tool, sometimes political, sometimes religious, always tied up with power and how states work.
Yeah, he's really digging into the how and the why we invented these systems over millennia. Not the what of time is some abstract physical force. It's that human focus that makes his work so compelling.
Okay, so let's get to the core argument of his work then. The big idea that sort of sets the stage for everything else.
Right. Holford Stravins frames the entire history of the calendar, all of it, as this long, frustrating, centuries-long effort. An attempt to reconcile three astronomical periods that refused to be reconciled.
The universe just refusing to be neat and tidy for us.
Exactly. You've got the day that's the Earth spinning. You've got the lunar month, the moon going around the Earth, and the solar year, the Earth going around the sun.
And the problem is they just don't line up nicely in whole numbers, do they?
Not even close. It's this astronomical messiness. The solar year is 365.2422 days. A lunar cycle is about 29 and a half days.
You can't divide one by the other and get a simple answer.
Nope. And that fundamental, unruly math of the cosmos, that's the engine. That's what drives every single innovation in timekeeping, every calendar reform, every big political fight over how we structure our days and years.
So the book really traces this whole intellectual journey, step by step. Starts way back, prehistoric times, people just noticing patterns.
Right, then moves through ancient systems. You know, the Egyptians with their solar calendar, the Chinese systems, then into medieval Europe, monastic timekeeping.
The invention of the mechanical clock, that was huge.
Huge, a revolution. And then bringing us right up to today, with global synchronization, time zones, even atomic clocks.
It really shows how these temporal systems, they're like mirrors reflecting a civilization, what they value, what they need.
They reflect and they shape. They show us, say, the agricultural focus of one society or the religious needs of another or the industrial coordination demands of a third. And then those systems turn around and organize how people live, how power works.
Okay, let's dive into some of those details, starting with how early societies even divided up the day. You mentioned early agricultural societies used something called seasonal hours.
Yeah, seasonal hours. And if you think about it, if your life revolves around the sun and farming, it makes a lot of sense, doesn't it?
How did it work exactly?
You just take the time from sunrise to sunset, whatever that is on a given day, and divide it into 12 parts. Same for the night. Sunset to sunrise divided by 12.
Okay, so an hour of daylight in the middle of summer would be much longer than an hour of daylight in deep winter.
Exactly. The length of the hour changed with the seasons. 12 daytime hours, 12 nighttime hours. but the actual duration varied wildly.
Makes sense for farming, like you said. You work while there's light, but totally impractical for anything else, right?
Yeah.
Especially anything needing coordination.
Completely.
Yeah.
You can't run a railroad or schedule meetings with hours that stretch and shrink. That's why the mechanical clock, when it eventually arrived, demanded something different. Equinoctial hours. Hours of equal length. 60 minutes. All day, all night, all year round. Fixed. Rigid.
That shift from fluid, sun-based hours to these fixed mechanical hours, that was a really fundamental change in how people experienced time itself. A necessary step for, well, everything that came later.
Absolutely. Now, the day in the year, even with their messy relationship, they are at least tied to something real happening in the sky, right?
Yeah.
Earth spinning, Earth orbiting.
You have astronomical anchors.
But the week.
That's
the seven-day week.
Yeah.
This is where Holford Stravens really hammers home the idea of time being constructed.
Because the week is completely artificial.
Totally. It has absolutely no clear basis in astronomy, none whatsoever. It just cycles on and on, completely independent of the moon phases or the seasons.
So where did it come from?
Well, the likely origin he traces is Babylonian astrology. They track the seven visible celestial bodies moving against the fixed stars, sun, moon, Mars, Mercury, Jupiter, Venus, Saturn.
And they name the days after them, which we still kind of do in English and other languages.
Exactly. And then that structure got really cemented by the Judeo-Christian tradition with the 7 days of creation and the commandment for a Sabbath day of rest.
And its persistence is just incredible. Think about it. It's this purely human-made rhythm, maybe thousands of years old, and it dictates the structure of modern life globally, more or less.
It really does. It's one of the most successful pieces of social technology ever invented, proving just how much we organize our lives around these constructed systems, not just natural ones.
Okay, so if the week is arbitrary, the calendar used by the Roman Republic before Caesar, that sounds like it was arbitrary and spectacularly corrupt.
Oh, it was a mess. This gets us right into the politics of time. Before Caesar, Rome used a lunisolar calendar, trying to track both the moon and the sun.
Which means it needed constant adjustment to stop the months drifting away from the seasons, right?
And who got to make those adjustments? Not astronomers, but politically appointed priests, the pontifices. They had the sole power to decide when to stick in an extra month, an intercalary month.
Oh, I see where this is going.
Yep. Total power over the length of the year. If your political allies were in office, maybe you let the year run a bit longer, give them more time.
And if your enemies were in charge or up for election soon, oops, guess we need a shorter year this time.
You got it. Lengthening or shortening years for political gain? Mm-hmm. Imagine. It was the calendar being used directly as a political weapon. Complete chaos for anyone trying to plan anything long term.
Just unbelievable power concentrated in a few hands. So how did it get fixed?
Enter Julius Caesar. Around 46 BCE, advised by an astronomer named Sosigenes, he decided enough was enough. He scrapped the unpredictable lunisolar system.
And replaced it with
a purely solar calendar. 365 days, with a leap day added every 4 years to account for that extra fraction of a day in the solar year, the Julian calendar.
That sounds much more rational, but getting there, wasn't there something called the Year of Confusion?
Yes. To get the new calendar aligned correctly with the seasons after years of drift, 46 BCE had to be made incredibly long. Holford Stravens notes it ended up being 445 days long.
445 days? Wow, the sheer bureaucratic and social upheaval. You can't even imagine.
Right. But Caesar basically used fixing the calendar, this act of bringing temporal order, as a way to assert his authority and consolidate the legitimacy of the growing Roman Empire. Control the calendar, control the state.
Which sets us up perfectly for the next big shift. Dividing the day mechanically. You mentioned the weight-driven mechanical clock appearing in late 13th century Europe.
Yes, a pivotal invention. And interestingly, their initial purpose wasn't commerce or industry.
It was religious, wasn't it? Developed in monasteries.
Exactly. Medieval monasteries had these complex schedules of daily prayers, the liturgy of the hours. They needed reliable bells to signal when it was time for the next service. The first clocks were basically sophisticated alarm systems for monks.
But the impact went way beyond the monastery walls.
Massively. This is where the clock starts to fundamentally change human consciousness, human experience. It imposed what Holford Stravens calls temporal discipline.
Moving society away from, what was it, task orientation.
Yeah, from a life rhythm based on tasks. I'll shear the sheep until I'm done. I'll harvest until the field is cleared towards a time-oriented life.
I start work at 8 Harne sharp, and I finish at 5 Siver p.m., regardless of whether the task is done.
Precisely that. This standardized, synchronized way of living.
Yeah.
It wasn't really widespread before the clock made it possible.
But you could argue that discipline, that need for coordination, already existed in places like the monasteries or the military. Did the clock create that discipline, or just give rulers a much better tool to enforce it on a larger scale?
That's a great point. That tension is definitely there. The clock was perhaps the necessary tool to scale up that kind of coordination for society as a whole.
Making things like the Industrial Revolution, with its factories needing hundreds of people to start and stop work at the same moment, even conceivable.
Absolutely. The world slowly shifted its master from the position of the sun in the sky to the hands on the clock face.
And once you have industrial scale and things like railways connecting distant places, you run into the next big time problem, global synchronization.
Right. The railway problem in the 19th century. It sounds mundane, but it was huge. Before standardized time zones, every single town just set its clocks by local noon when the sun was highest in the sky there.
Which means the time changed constantly as you traveled east or west. A train timetable would be an absolute nightmare.
Impossible. Your arrival time in the next town would be based on their local time, which was different from where you started. Chaos.
So who fixed that?
A Canadian engineer, Sanford Fleming, was a key advocate for a worldwide system. His campaigning, along with the needs of railways and shipping and telegraphs, led to the 1884 International Meridian Conference in Washington, D.C.
And that's where they established Greenwich in London as the prime meridian, 0 degrees longitude.
That's the one. And the basis for our global system of 24 time zones. It was this unprecedented moment of global agreement, really, driven almost entirely by the practical needs of technology and commerce.
But there's one final step, wasn't there? The ultimate separation of our time from anything natural.
Yes. The final triumph, you could say, of artificial time. Turns out, even the Earth's rotation isn't perfectly regular. It speeds up, it slows down, just tiny amounts, but enough to mess with really high-precision science and global communication systems developed in the 20th century.
Astronomical time just wasn't good enough anymore.
Not for the level of precision needed. So in 1967, the official definition of the fundamental unit, the second, was changed.
Detached completely from the Earth's spin or orbit.
Completely. It was redefined based on something incredibly stable and predictable. The vibrations of a cesium-133 atom in a lab. Atomic time.
Wow. Atomic temporality. We've gone from watching the sun and moon to listening to the hum of an atom. That really is the endpoint of this incredible, long, messy, inventive human journey to master time.
It really is. Okay, let's maybe shift gears slightly and pull out some of the key themes Holford Stevens identifies from this whole history, because they really do resonate today.
Good idea. The first big one seems to be this idea of temporal systems and cultural expressions. The way a society keeps time isn't neutral. It reflects what that culture values most.
Absolutely. You look at, say, traditional Islamic calendars being lunar that reflects specific theological commitments in history. You look at the ancient Egyptians' focus on the solar year and the Nile flood that reflects their agricultural reality.
The system embodies the worldview.
Exactly. And the reflection for us today is, if you realize that our current, often frantic, hyper-scheduled way of life is largely a cultural choice, one inherited from, say, the needs of 19th century factories.
Does that give you a bit more power to question it, to maybe consciously choose different temporal values for yourself?
It potentially does, which connects nicely to the second theme, the political dimension of temporal authority.
Right. Controlling the calendar, controlling the clock. It's always been about controlling power. Holford Stevens has that great line that temporal standardization is always political reform by other means.
We saw it with Caesar, right? Using the Julian calendar to cement imperial control. We saw it later with Pope Gregory XIII reforming the calendar in the 16th century, primarily to fix the date of Easter and assert Catholic uniformity against the Protestant Reformation.
Defining time is defining order, and often defining who's in charge.
So we need to stay critical, even today. When there's a push for certain kinds of scheduling or 24/7 connectivity or specific work patterns, is it really just about efficiency? Or does it also serve to reinforce a particular economic system or social hierarchy?
A very important question. And the final theme.
That's the underlying tension between natural and artificial temporal systems. The whole story is this gradual, sometimes reluctant move away from rhythms tied to nature, day, night, seasons, moon phases.
Towards these increasingly abstract, artificial, human-made systems that are optimized for coordination and precision, like the clock, like time zones, like atomic seconds.
And we gain incredible efficiency, incredible power through that coordination. But Holford Stevens also points to a potential cost, what he calls temporal alienation.
a disconnection.
Yeah, a potential disconnection from the natural rhythms that, for millennia, shaped human biology and consciousness. We need to find a balance, maybe, between the undeniable benefits of this precise artificial time and our, perhaps, deeper human need to feel connected to the cycles of the natural world.
Finding that balance seems key. Now, the book itself, it sounds like it's full of these really sharp, memorable insights. Maybe we can share a few of the core concepts that really stick out.
Yeah, there's the great ones. I think the absolute foundation of his argument is this idea: time is not discovered, but constructed.
And each construction reveals the deepest assumptions about reality held by its builders. That really captures it. The calendar isn't just math. It's a window into a culture's soul.
Exactly. And then thinking about the impact of technology, especially the clock, there's this one. The clock did not merely measure time. It created a new form of temporal consciousness that gradually reshaped human experience itself.
The clock wasn't just a tool. It rewired how we think and live. Powerful.
And finally, on that cost we just discussed, that idea of disconnection. The price of temporal precision has been the gradual disconnection of human experience from the natural rhythms that shaped consciousness for millennia.
It's a stark reminder, isn't it, that achieving this incredible modern synchronization might have come at the expense of something fundamental.
Mm-hmm. So bringing it all back to the listener, how can we actually use these insights? What are the real life applications?
Well, first, I think it's about personal awareness. If you accept that time, as we experience it daily, is largely a human construct, then you can start to examine your own relationship with it, your own temporal values. Why do you feel that constant pressure to be productive every minute? Is that an iron law of physics?
Or is it perhaps just a cultural habit, a value system about productivity and pace that we've inherited, maybe unconsciously? Recognizing that gives you options.
That leads to the second application, cultural empathy. Understanding this long, messy history of different societies struggling with the same astronomical problems, it really helps foster respect for temporal diversity. You start to see why other cultures might maintain different calendars, like the Islamic lunar calendar or traditional Chinese lunisolar calendars. They aren't wrong or primitive.
No, they're equally valid functional solutions to that same core problem of reconciling day, month, and year, just reflecting different histories and priorities. It breeds respect, not judgment.
And finally, maybe technology management. We live immersed in digital time, hyper-precise schedules, constant notifications demanding our attention now.
Right. We can apply this idea of temporal alienation directly to our digital lives. Is the technology serving us, or are we serving its relentless clock?
Recognizing the artificiality of those constant demands can help you choose. Choose when to engage, when to use the clock and the schedule as the useful tools they are, and when to consciously step back and not let them dictate your entire experience.
Well said. For me, the most valuable takeaway from all this is seeing the calendar and the clock not just as useful tools, but as these incredible monuments to human ingenuity.
And persistence.
Yeah, it wasn't easy. Not at all. It's this story of a multi-millennial struggle full of frustration and setbacks to try and impose some kind of human order, some predictability, onto a fundamentally chaotic and uncooperative cosmos.
It shows that really big advancements, the things that shape civilization, they aren't quick fixes. They're often built on centuries of patient, difficult, intellectual, and political work.
Exactly. Quite humbling, actually.
My final thought, maybe for you listening, is just the sheer power that comes from this realization that almost everything you take for granted about time, the 7 days in a week, the 24 equal hours in a day, it's ultimately arbitrary.
A human agreement.
A social contract. Exactly. And once you really grasp that artificiality, that constructed nature, it gives you back a surprising amount of power over your own relationship with time, your own sense of pace and rhythm in the world. See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.